One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. And don't forget to check us out on the website at beekeepingfornewbies.com as well. We've got a lot of good resources on there. If you want to find some swarm traps, it is swarm season. We got some swarm trap plans up there. We got some nuke plans and lots of other documents and information. So feel free to check that out. And if you'd like to see videos of me acting goofy, just go over to youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. And today, episode 138, we're going to talk about some common beekeeping, particularly beginner beekeeping mistakes. I mean, I guess, you know, you could have a beekeeper who is a seasoned beekeeper who just makes bad decisions. So it kind of falls into the seasoned beekeeper making bad decisions episode. So it could be a combination of experience levels here. But we'll roll through this list, and as a second quick admin note, I have some bad news, like I don't have the little button to push for that anymore, but ads are coming back. So it is the spring ramp-up season. I had an idea, I had this kind of idea in my mind that absolutely did not work at all, but I thought, hey, I'm going to turn off ads, and I did that back in like November, late November, early December. I had an idea of what I thought would happen if I turned them off. It did not happen. So I am going to be turning ads back on again, probably in the next week or so, by like the 1st of April. So I do apologize for having to do that, but it's just one of those things. So that's going to be on its way back. With that, there will be a transition probably to a new podcast host, which is a little bit of a pain, but it's what we got to do to keep the bills paid. So number one on our list, and I think it's fitting to make it number one, is not treating for Varroa because you want to be all natural. Now, I'll tell you, man, I am a huge fan. I've said this before about natural anything when it comes to agriculture and forestry and, you know, aquatic life and, you know, anything we can do to minimize the number of chemicals and synthetic things that we're putting out into the environment, putting into our bodies. Huge, huge fan of all of that. But if you love nature and you love things that are natural and return to the earth, like don't treat your bees and they will return to the earth much, much faster as fertilizer because they will get sick and they will die. You have to have a solution in place of some sort, whatever you want to do, but find some sort of a respected and effective treatment method for Varroa, whether it's oxalic acid, thymol, Apivar, you know, Ametraz of whatever formula is still working today, you know, Formic Pro, whatever. Find one that is effective and please use that with an effective IPM strategy. Okay, and in line with that, next on the list, we have not doing mite washes. I mean, I can think of tons and tons of examples that are similar to this in other areas, other walks of life or whatever it might be. But you have to know that what you're doing is effective. So my recommendation is, let's say that you're coming out of the winter right now and you're like, okay, let's get a good treatment on the colony before the spring ramp up really gets, you know, gets hot and heavy here. Go ahead and do a mite count. And let's say that you're coming out of winter and your mite count is, say, 6. And you say, okay, well, here is my chosen treatment method. Let's do an application of that. And then maybe the next day, or depending on what your treatment, you know, what the treatment plan looks like, right? Some of these things need to be on for a couple of weeks or whatever it might be. Whenever the treatment cycle has ended, do another mite wash. Oh, okay, great. Now we're down to 2. So you know that you have an effective treatment. Now you might be a little bit concerned because you're thinking like, wow, I thought this might knock it down to 0 to 1 and we're at 2, but okay, well, we'll check again next month and see where we are. You're never going to know if what you're doing is working if you're not checking. That's part one. Part two of that is some people just say, oh, I just automatically check every 3 months or automatically treat every 3 months. Well, that's cool too, but what if you know your bees have developed a really great varroa resistance and you don't need to treat, right? So now you're exposing them to chemicals and things that they don't even need. Or you're putting, you know, more of these treatments out there for potential resistance to be built up to the treatment. So have a treatment plan, but also do the assessments and learn how to do alcohol wash or dish soap wash or sugar wash, sugar rolls. You know, learn how to do sugar shakes. Learn how to do one of those that you like. I recommend, like I said, the alcohol or the dish soap. I think both those are pretty effective. You know, if you like the sugar shake, sugar roll, whatever, have at it. But just do something. Okay, next on the list, I have taking bad advice. And this is a tough one because if you don't know, like, how do you know what you don't know? If you're brand new and you have somebody giving you advice, and you're like, well, this guy says he's been keeping bees for 20 years. I mean, he's got to know. I cannot tell you how many emails I've gotten, how many chats and discussions that I've had with people who have said, well, my mentor told me that I don't need to do any inspections, or that I only need to inspect once a month, or that I don't need to treat for varroa. Or, oh, my favorite, one of my newer favorite ones, oh, I just let the bees swarm every year. What? I think it was JT or one of the guys in the chat was saying that, like, that their mentors are telling him, like, yeah, just let them swarm every year. Like, no, that's not how you manage. That's not animal husbandry. That's not what you're supposed to be doing. Oh, Lord, there's so many reasons why that's bad. But there is a lot of bad advice out there, and it's really hard to know what's good, what's bad. I think it's always a good idea to use multiple sources. Double check with and against a good, reputable source. Now, you always know if you heard it from me, it's right. So that's kind of like your one-stop shop. You can just come here. If I say it, because I think it's like 92% of the time I'm right every time. So, you know, you're always safe to go that route. But this kind of goes back to that old saying, you know, believe none of what you hear and half of what you see type of things. You know, trust what you see. Trust your observations. Trust what you've seen as you're developing your beekeeping game and your skills and techniques. Take everything with a grain of salt. Take it all in, but get a second opinion too. Now, another thing that is a really common problem, and it happens with first year. I see it mostly with like years 1 through 3, and it's splitting too soon. Now, I'm going to tell you, particularly if you're a new beekeeper, man, this is the cool time of year. Your bees are coming in and you've got your nuke or your packages and you're seeing all this pollen coming in and the bees are going crazy. And you're like, wow, I can't believe it took me so long to get into this amazing hobby. This is so great. The spring is a very forgiving time of year because there's just so much goodness going on. In fact, I did a video. I just remembered this. It's on YouTube. It's called The Top 5 Things That Are Killing Your Honeybees. I don't remember off the top of my head what the whole list was. I think I remember like 2 of them. But one of them was around splitting. And I have Oprah in there like, you get a split and you get a split. But that's like what people will do that sometimes. They're like, hey, I just did a split, you know, in June and the hive's looking great. I'm going to do another one. And I love the enthusiasm. I love that desire to want to make more colonies and have more growth and to have all of these cool, amazing things happening. Like I really love that. But the problem is, you know, the spring will end. You know, if you think back to the old Game of Thrones, right? Winter is coming and the bees are prepping for winter right now. Like right now, the bees are getting ready for winter. Everything they're drawing in now is what they're going to eat in November, December, January, February, March of next year, providing that you aren't stealing it all from them. Like if you take all of their honey that they bring in over the next couple months and you keep it for you, then obviously you're giving them sugar syrup and other things, and that's what they're going to be eating. But splitting too soon, one problem. Splitting too often, you know, single hive splitting it and then splitting it again, or sometimes doing multiples to or singles to many. And like I've done that before. I mentioned it a few times in the past where I took a single hive, split it four or five ways. When you're doing those things, these are all things you can absolutely do. The problem is you're doing them as a new beekeeper who doesn't exactly understand all the dynamics that are at play, and you're running the risk of losing everything. In year one, don't even think about splitting. In year two, if you're going to do a split, which definitely would make sense for swarm control if you want to do that, you can take, let's say you have two colonies over winter, take resources from both and make one strong new colony. Very cool idea. You don't have to make one for one. You don't have to take each of those, you know, single colonies and make another colony from each of those. You can just combine it to make a single new one. You could do two or three if you wanted, but take it slow. Learn more. Understand why you're doing the split. Understand the challenges of it. Understand what is required of them to build the resources needed to make it through the winter. Another problem is supering too late or adding honey supers a little bit too late. As we get into the spring and we start this ramp up, quite often, I should actually step back a little bit. At the end of the previous season, sometimes you consolidate a little bit. Maybe you take off the honey supers and you just have brood boxes on. And then you get this big growth that's taking place right now. Once it starts getting warmer, you can kind of super relatively early. Like you can get those on now. You could have had them on for the past 2 or 3 weeks. The cluster of bees will still cluster. If it gets cold at night, which it is in most places still, they'll just cluster and they'll be fine. If there is a little bit more space above them, that's okay. It's not going to be a big deal. They're going to fill everything up very quickly anyway. But the risk you run into if you don't put a honey super on is they're going to try to backfill all the space where new brood is emerging. They're going to backfill that with nectar. When they do that, they're running out of space to put brood, and then you're going to end up in a swarming situation and queen cells are going to pop up, and then it's going to start to be an issue. So I would say super, when in doubt, put a honey super on. Next here on the list is not keeping good notes. Now, like many things with beekeeping, you can do whatever you want. You can go out to the colonies and do your inspections, and you can never take notes. And it can be a new, exciting adventure every time you open the hive. You're like, oh, what are we going to see today? What I like to do is open up my notebook and be like, okay, we have 10 colonies here. Okay, this is what we saw on this one last time. Kind of go through the list. And then I can say, you know what? I'm going to start today on hive number 3 because last time they had some real issues going on. I want to know the status of that. Because if I know that up front, I can then maybe use the inspections on 1 and 2 and then 4 through 10 to see if I need to move resources around or at least get a handle on what the problem is with that one so that as I'm doing the other ones, I can incorporate my management plan for that colony into the other activity I have for that day. So knowing what happened last time or over the past few weeks is going to be really helpful for allowing you to be more prepared for what you're doing in that day. There's another component to that too, whereas if you're trying to ever use, you know, the USDA ELAP program, you will need to provide some notes for your, you know, for your claim. If you're submitting a claim, they do want to know the status of your hives and things. So you want to be maintaining and documenting. We almost need to do a separate episode just dedicated to documentation, but make sure you're keeping status of, you know, how many frames of bees that you're seeing, how much food, the resources they have, the status of the queen, you know, anything that might be relevant that you can use again later on and help keep track of, all good things. If you see the presence of any hive beetle, wax moth, any other kind of things that might be an issue or any brood-related illness, definitely make sure you're making notes of that. What I like to do too is add little stars. If I'm doing it in hand, you know, handwritten, add stars in certain places where I've made a note. That way, when I come back and I'm digitizing my notes, I know to make like a bold statement or something that stands out about a particular thing. But please make sure you're keeping really, really good notes. Again, not only for yourself too, but let's say you have a mentor that calls you up and says, hey, listen, I heard you mention in your email there that you were going to do an inspection this weekend. I wanted to find out how it went. You pull the notes up and you're like, oh yeah, here's my notes right here. Boom, boom, boom. You can run through everything. All right, next up. not having, one, the necessary equipment that you would need, and two, having it ready. So at a minimum, you know, hive tool, smoker, and a veil. Now, if you want to have big, thick, heavy gloves, you want to have a full body suit on, you want to have, you know, thermal underwear, pair of jeans, like whatever else you want to put on there, by all means, have, you know, layer up if that's what you like to do. But at a minimum, have your tools, get that smoker lit before you start inspecting. And I say it kind of like half-heartedly, but I've gone out before. I'm like, all right, here we go. And I'm ready to just start. I'm starting to crack the hive open. I'm like, oh, I didn't even light the smoker. Is it a big deal? No, you just walk off to the side, you light the smoker, and you come back where you were. But it's one of those things where, you know, just kind of try to get used to having that ready to go and have your stuff with you. Like, go ahead and do a little bit of mental, physical, whatever kind of inventory you have to do. Say, okay, we're going to go do our inspections. Is everything here? Okay, great. Now, in addition to having that, like I've mentioned a few times, I do like to have a little cart if I'm doing, you know, any kind of movement of boxes or I'm doing a lot of different inspections. Having that little cart can be kind of handy just to have a place to put things. And I've had a really bad habit of just setting things down in random places. Now, the next two are kind of hand in hand and kind of related to each other. But one of them is ignoring or being able to recognize robbing behavior. Now, this one can be a little bit tricky because there are times where, you know, the foragers are out, they find a food source, they come back, they do a little waggle dance, and other, you know, other foragers follow them out. And so that you start to see maybe a ramp up in activity that can happen. I've seen times where the hive, you know, is not very active, to look at it just visually. There's bees coming in and out, but it's not all that active. And then like the sun shines on it for the first time that day or whatever. And it's kind of like a little wake up call. And I've seen some additional activities sometimes just with the sun. Recognizing normal fluctuations in activity and then being able to differentiate that between robbing is really important. With robbing, there's going to be a combination of things that you should be looking for. Your bees that are returning, they know where the entrance is. They're going to fly down pretty close to right where it is, land nearby, and take a few steps and walk in the door. Robber bees haven't figured this out yet, so they're going to be bouncing around the outside sometimes, trying to find a way in, or if they have figured out roughly where your bees are coming and going, they might be looking around the whole thing to find another way in. So that can be a sign that, if nothing else, that it's being scouted. But in addition to some of that scouting kind of activity, and then, of course, not exactly knowing how to get in, what you'll see is a lot of like fighting and aggressive behavior between bees that are coming in and those that are near the entrance. I mean, they'll be balling each other, rolling off the landing board or any kind of a platform that they can land on. You'll see them just rolling and tumbling off that down onto the ground. They'll be very aggressive, a lot of activity. If you see that, that is not good. Now, a lot of people really don't know what to do. In a situation like that, when you have robbing, if it's just a little bit that's kind of going on, you can usually just reduce the entrance down really small and then they kind of get a handle on things and it's okay. When they've gotten to the point where bees are just streaming in and out, right? There are bees flying in, not carrying anything. There's no pollen on their, you know, their pollen sacs, and they're just going in and streaming out. They're not swarming. They're not on their way to swarm. They're 100% robbing. And when that happens, the only real solution in the short term is to shut things down. So close the entrance completely. No, you know, your bees aren't going to be able to get in. The robbers aren't going to be able to get out. But at least it stops the bleeding temporarily. And then maybe, you know, like maybe an hour, half hour before the evening sets in, before it gets dark, you open it back up again. Let the ones that shouldn't be there leave. Let the ones that should be there come back in. But this also ties hand in hand with the next thing on the list, which is leaving entrances wide open. Now, this is another one of the many topics in beekeeping that has a lot of debate with it. I do like to open the entrances all the way. When it's, you know, when it's like May, like pretty much all of the month of May, I'll open them up wide open. Sometimes I don't. It's not a big deal either way. It really doesn't matter. If you have the like a standard entrance reducer that you buy and it's got like the 3/4 to 1 inch kind of entrance, and then it has like that, I don't know, 2 3/4 to 3 inch entrance, that 2 to 3 inch one, that's all you need. And you can pretty much run that year round. It's a good size to allow a ton of bees to come in and out. If you're concerned, just go to the smallest one. they will absolutely manage. Like, you'll look at it and you'll be like, oh no, I'm restricting them, I'm slowing them down. They'll be fine. They know how to do this. They're really good at it. But if you're down to the 2 to 3 inch size, that's a much smaller space for them to defend. It's a lot easier for them to defend. And I really recommend not even changing that. You can have it at the 3/4 to 1 inch all year long. When it's the busy time of year, move to the 2 to 3 inch and leave it at that. But when it gets, you know, for, like I said, for me, once you hit June, you get into that dearth time of year, I just go ahead and take it back to like 3/4 of an inch. And that seems to help. Now, another thing you can do too is a lot of people have said, yeah, I like having an entrance reducer, but I don't want to, occlude the airflow because it is pretty hot in the summertime where a lot of people are. And that's where you can just go with like a hardware cloth entrance reducer. And what you can do is cut a couple of slits in that to where you can just bend it up and open it up and have it kind of wide open for a lot of easy movement in and out. But as the season changes and as the nectar flow kind of wears down, just bend some of those pieces back and make the entrance a little bit smaller and then replace it as the season ends and you're getting into the fall. Go ahead and replace it with a solid entrance reducer. All right, last on the list here today, we have you and taking care of you. Please make sure that you're drinking plenty of water, you're getting your electrolytes, whether it's through like a Gatorade type of drink with sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium, all that kind of good stuff. Avoid alcohol, minimize the caffeine or other things that are diuretics. If you're taking antibiotics or anything that advises you to not be out in the sun or in the heat, please heed those warnings. You got to stay hydrated. Having all that extra gear on is a fast path to getting you dehydrated. You start off with like cramps and then you get heat exhaustion. Next thing you know, it's heat stroke and you're having a real medical emergency. And we definitely don't want that to happen. So as they scream to us in basic training, beat the heat, drink water. Okay, everyone. Well, this is absolutely not a comprehensive all-in-one kind of list. This is, you know, about a dozen things off the top of my head. But I want you to kind of get the gears turning in your mind, thinking about things that, yeah, I guess making sure that you're being more deliberate. When you go out and you say, okay, I'm going to go do some inspections today. What do I want to have with me? And hey, I'm doing some research. I'm listening to a podcast, watching a YouTube channel, talking to a mentor, going to a B Club meeting. I want you to take all the information in. I want you to find out what's good quality information. Do some research on things you're hearing. Ask questions. Ask again of somebody else. Making mistakes is normal, right? Don't expect your first, second, or even fifth season to be perfect. It's a very, very dynamic hobby / career. They will always keep you on your toes. There's always going to be something new to kind of trip you up. Just try to relax, ask a lot of questions, have fun. And like I mentioned at the beginning, you can always join us over in the Discord room, ask some questions over there, download those swarm, trap, and nuke plans. Hit me up, Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com if you have any questions. Outside of that, take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you. And there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.